This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
And welcome to the People Speak Radio Network. This is David Swanson, your host, and we have two guests with us for the next hour, Tracy Barker and her attorney, Stuart Hoffer. Welcome to both of you.
Good evening.
Thank you.
We will be taking your calls on the program, and I'll give those numbers out shortly. And first, I'd like to get into a little bit of what Tracy Barker experienced as an employee of Halliburton and with contact with the State Department in Iraq. And then we'll talk to her attorney, Stuart Hoffer, about what, if anything, is being pursued in the way of justice. Tracy, can you just give us a quick background of where you're from and how you came to be in Iraq working for a subsidiary of the Halliburton Corporation?
I was brought up in California and also in Salt Lake City, Utah. Moved to Fort Bragg, North Carolina with my husband. He's been in the military for 23 years. And I was going to join the military, but because of our family size, dual military was not possible, so I went to work for Halliburton and ended up as a contractor over in Iraq.
And when did you go to Iraq?
I went over there in July of 2004.
And was your husband serving in the military over there or back here?
Actually, he was back here at Fort Bragg while I was in Iraq.
Uh-huh. And when you got over there, did you immediately encounter an environment and a situation that was unpleasant in terms of sexual harassment, or was it an okay working condition initially?
When I first got over into the Green Zone at Camp Hope, my work environment, there was a lot of sexual harassment. And I had an immediate supervisor that was abusing the American and the Iraqi women. And when I had called the ethics hotline through Halliburton to report what was happening, instead of it being confidential, the reports ended up going to my immediate supervisor.
So you called an ethics hotline to report on your supervisor, and they told your supervisor?
Yes, it was supposed to be confidential, and instead of being confidential, the report went directly to my supervisor with my name on it.
Terrific. And what was it that he was doing?
It was actually a female and a male, and they were, the environment was a lot of bad language, threatening to choke the females, and including American and Iraqi women. And it came to a point where my supervisor actually choked a female Iraqi woman in a conference that we had.
He grabbed her around the neck and choked her?
Yes.
And when you made this report and it came to his attention, did things become worse for you?
Yes, it did. I was retaliated against. I was told to report to Human Resource Department in Baghdad, and where immediately I was given a report of my job performance, where I was almost forced to sign a report of the manager had created that day, saying that because of bad work conduct, that they needed to speak to me about it, when a week prior I had received an award for job performance from Halliburton and also the State Department.
Wow. Okay, so, let's continue, because this story gets worse, I am afraid. What, in addition, happened to you while working in Iraq?
I was confined to my living container and told that I couldn't leave or contact anybody. I had food that was brought to me like I was a prisoner. And if I had to use the bathroom, I was forced to use the bathroom in front of a human resource worker, coordinator. And when I had asked why she was treating me like that, making me leave the door open while I went to the bathroom, her reply was Halliburton didn't want me to call the United States for help anymore.
And this is prior to any other incidents. This is simply in response to the ethics complaint that you made.
Yes.
Okay. And yet I still think the story is going to get worse. What else happened to you?
I was told that I would be brought to my living quarters when an investigator would come from Houston, and when the investigator came, I was never contacted, and eventually I was removed from my position that I loved, and I was sent over to another department. Basically, I had lost my job and was told that I was moved into another position, and I kept wondering where the investigator was because I hadn't heard from him, and none of the other people, including one of Halliburton's attorneys that worked in Baghdad, was waiting to talk to the investigator about what had happened. And basically what had happened is I was retaliated against, and I was moved out of my position and false imprisonment.
And I'm sorry to try to rush through this endless story, and we can come back to each point, but at some point there is an incident involving an employee of the State Department, correct?
Yes. I was moved from Baghdad, and I ended up in Basra on March 11th of 2005. I was told that I was needed in Basra for a position. So I traveled through Kuwait, went to Basra, and when I arrived, there was men waiting outside the camp where the convoy showed up, and they wanted to see what I looked like to approve my transfer.
So if you weren't good-looking enough to them, they would oppose letting you work there?
I'm not sure what they were opposing, but they said that they had to see what I looked like to approve my transfer, and they said, okay, your transfer is approved, and here's your office. When I walked into my office walls were covered with pornography of R&Rs that men took over in Thailand to different brothels, and also animals having sex. And there wasn't one or two pictures. They were real life pictures that were pasted throughout the office. I was told by my coworkers that I can sit on the floor where women belong. There was statements of the previous female employee that worked in the department that basically she was forced out of her job, and that was where my workspace was supposed to be. And they had bulletin mottos that said, we do what we can to get you in bed, and pasted all throughout the headquarters of Halliburton.
So this is a Halliburton office in Basra, Iraq?
Yes.
And were you the only woman working there at the time?
On that camp, Halliburton employees, there was probably maybe 20 women, and that would be a high number, and maybe 15 State Department employee females. And Basra was a very small camp, and then on the other side was the British side, and I wasn't exactly sure of the count of their camp.
But women were a distinct minority. There were many more men than that.
Yes, they started conducting meetings. The State Department in Halliburton started conducting meetings where the females, whether you were National Guard, Army, Marines, State Department, contractor, no matter what company, and in these meetings we were told that we were not safe and that we should walk in numbers and that the men were overly horny in a war zone. We were told not to talk about the meeting or we would lose our job, and that was Halliburton's order to us. I'm not sure how the other women were told to talk about the meeting. I'm not sure how their unit or employer had told them to handle it, but that's what we were ordered to do. And immediately after the meetings, we had metal coverings that they had covered our windows of our living trailers with so that we cannot see outside, and it was supposed to keep the men away from the females.
Wow. Before we continue with what went on there, I want to let people know that they'll be able to get in on this conversation. This is the People Speak Radio. This is your host, David Swanson, and we're speaking with Tracy Barker, a former employee of a subsidiary of Halliburton in Iraq, and we will be speaking momentarily with her attorney as well, Stuart Hoffer. But you can call in toll-free from anywhere in the world at 877-489-6350. That's 877-489-6350. Or in the U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. Tracy, tell me if I'm jumping over anything, but at some point we get to the incident that I've read and seen accounts of involving an employee of the State Department named Ali Mokhtari. Is that what happened next, or is there?
There is an incident that happened on May 13th.
Okay.
After the attack of Ali Mokhtari, I had a camp supervisor that was sexually harassing me, kept telling me that I needed to sleep with him to stay safe, and I kept telling him to leave me alone. I had tried to get to Kuwait to the Human Resource Department because Basra did not have a human resource. And on May 13th, I had traveled to Kuwait, and when I had barely got to Kuwait, my logistics supervisor had followed me in a hard car and told me to come back or I would lose my job. And I was told that two of my coworkers' family members had died and I was needed back at the camp immediately, which later I found out was a false claim. And while we were traveling back, we had stopped at a staging area in Basra, and the supervisor of the logistics department had me ride back with a food truck, which was going to our camp, and so that I had to ride with them and took off and left me there with no PPE gear. So I was stuck in Basra, and I ended up traveling for 19 hours back to Basra, making the stops going to the airport and wherever this food truck had to go, traveling with a British soldier.
And
when
what
I had
is the
returned
gear that
back
you...
to the camp, the things in my trailer were taken out of there, furniture, my personal items were gone, as if I don't know what the plan was, but I had tracked it down to the same supervisor that left me at the staging area. He had all my furniture and everything inside of his living quarters.
And Tracy, what is the gear that he should have left you with that he did not?
Personal protective equipment.
Okay. And
helmet and your vest, and I was in a regular truck. It wasn't a hard car that, you know, they convoy you through the desert in. I was supposed to be protected by Halliburton and ride with my, you know, the people that employed me back into Basra, but I was left in Basra at the staging area, and I ended up riding for 19 hours. When I got back, I had reported it to EAP representative that I had been speaking with for several weeks, and I have documentation of that as well, that it's noted.
And what happened next?
The sexual harassment continued, and we were told that we couldn't walk outside after night, and on June 21st, I was working still in billeting, and basically what we do is we cover, take care of the living quarters, and I was in charge of building a camp with the engineers for the chilling guards, and I was told that there was a air conditioner problem by a State Department employee, and I was also on call that night because every other night we had taken turns on being on call for any problems. So, when I went into the dining facility and was about to leave, I was told that his air conditioner didn't work and asked me if I can come look at it. And I said, sure, and I went to look at the air conditioner at his living quarters and went into there, and he said he wanted to tell me a story about the war and started talking about the Sunni and Shiites and how they're all fighting for the same thing. And then he started pouring alcohol and offered me a drink, and I declined the drink, and he said that I was being a rude woman, and where he was from, women are not rude to men, and he made me hold the cup anyway, and I told him that I didn't drink, and he started telling me about a Filipino woman in Saudi Arabia that was raped, and nobody believed her, and she was later found dead. After he told me this horrific story of a rape of a Filipino woman, he jumped up and grabbed me, and grabbed me around the neck, and he grabbed my breast, and we struggled, and he was assaulting me, and I had, you know, my hand and arms between his face and lips and between me. And we struggled, and I tried to get out again, and he made me think that I could get by him, and he tricked me again and grabbed me again around the neck. And he was sexually assaulting me. And I tried to get out of the trailer, and it was locked from the inside. And after we had fought for quite some time, he eventually let me out.
Sounds incredibly frightening, and this is in a situation where you've already learned that you aren't able to report offenses. So what do you do then?
Not only did I learn you can't report it, but there was nowhere to report it because the camp manager was sexually harassing me, and there was no human resource department in Basra, so the nearest human resource department was 19 hours away.
In Kuwait.
Right.
So what did you do?
I walked, and he followed me with a flashlight and started talking in Arabic, and we ran into a Farsi translator who knew him. They spoke in Arabic, and I was crying. She asked me if I was okay. I told her, no, I'm not okay. He said something to her in an angry tone, and then as he walked away, she told me that he was a very dangerous man and that he had made some threats, and I was crying, and I went to my living container, and I was in shock of what had happened, and I didn't know what to do. I paced into the trailer for maybe 2 or 3 minutes and went to hunt down Halliburton Security.
Okay, and were they helpful?
Actually, we cannot locate the camp manager, so I reported it to security, spent about an hour and a half, and I went back to the trailer, and my roommate was actually, she was in Kuwait training, so I was alone. I had asked for medical attention, and there was nobody to see me. We had a paramedic that was supposed to be, or EMT that was supposed to be starting sometime in the next few days. There was nobody for me to see. There was nowhere for me to go. I asked them if I could talk to a female. There was nowhere to talk to. They kept sending me to the same supervisor that was sexually harassing me. And that night, our generator went out on the camp, and it was pitch black dark, and I slept under my bed. Afraid, and
you were given
no
medical attention.
No.
Okay.
No medical attention at all. I was told to go back to the trailer and that they would let me know what I need to do the following morning.
And how do you eventually get out of that situation, and how did you eventually get back to the United States?
The following morning, I was brought to the RSO investigator for the State Department, and they started an investigation, and I was told that I had to stay in my living container for 3 days, so I was confined again to my living container. I was not allowed to call my husband. I was not allowed to email anybody, use a telephone, or anything at all. And I was denied medical attention. I was denied to leave the camp, call anybody, get any type of help whatsoever. I was stuck in the container for 3 days, and eventually the RSO investigator came to get me, and he told me that he wanted me to wear the same clothes that I was assaulted in, and to come to the dining facility, the DFAC, at 12 o'clock so that he can see how men reacted to me when I walked in to see if it was my fault that I was assaulted.
That's incredible. Was this a serious attempt at an investigation, or was this simply more harassment? I mean,
they made me believe that it was a serious investigation, but I felt harassed and denied medical care. I was having breakdowns. I was crying. I didn't know what was going on with me. I had been assaulted, almost raped, and I didn't know what to do. I couldn't call anybody. I had at one point snuck to use a phone booth to call my husband, and I was caught by the camp manager. And eventually I ran into a soldier named Kevin Rogers who let me use his cell phone. I called my husband at Fort Bragg, and my husband, actually one of his coworkers had started working for Blackwater, and my husband was arranging with him to get to Kuwait so that he can come into Iraq to get me out of Basra.
And is that how you eventually got home?
No. No, it's not.
Okay. So fill in the gaps. You eventually are able to call your husband on a borrowed cell phone, and then
yes.
What?
I told him what had happened to me, and then he had called back and said that he was coming to Kuwait, and he was waiting to manifest from the base. The State Department kept telling me they were investigating their employee, and the camp manager kept sexually harassing me, and I had nowhere to go. A couple of times they told me that I was manifesting to leave the camp in the morning, and this went on for about 19, 20 days, where I would wake up in the morning and I would go to leave on a convoy, and the camp manager of Halliburton and the State Department was yanking me off the manifest, and then they would tell me there was no room in the convoy. So sometime during the night, they would take me off the manifest so that I couldn't leave. So I was not able to leave the camp. It got so bad. I had to, eventually an EMT had came into the camp, and they had given me IV treatment, and they gave me sleeping pills to sleep. And the night that I was supposed to leave, they had introduced me to a doctor. His name's, can I say his name? Or?
Go ahead with the story. He was a doctor from the State Department, I believe. Isn't that right?
Yeah, he was a doctor from the State Department, and I was told, he was actually a psychiatrist, and I was told that he was stranded on our camp, and the new EMT for Halliburton had arranged for me to meet with him. So I met with him, and he told Halliburton and the State Department that he was taking me out of there no matter what. They were going back and forth in arguments, and he told them, no matter what, I'm taking her out of here to Kuwait, and she's flying home. And that night, usually somebody comes by your trailer, and they grab your footlocker and everything, and, you know, to go to the staging area to leave. And that night, I was passed out in my room from the medication that the medics had given me, and woke up, and I was being sexually assaulted by my camp manager. And that was the morning that I was leaving.
Well, while you're knocked out with sleeping medicine.
Right.
It's endless. I don't know how you survived.
Well, when
this,
I woke up, he was there, and he didn't have his clothes on, and he was on top of me, and I started crying, and all he kept saying was, why are you crying? And we were leaving in about an hour for Kuwait, and I immediately reported it to the physician that took me out of Iraq, and he took me
he, he took you to the United States?
Yeah, he took me to Kuwait to the human resource manager of Halliburton, and I did a two-hour report, and then I was sent over to the medics, and they put me on medical leave, and I was sent home on the airplane.
This is an incredible story, Tracy, maybe the worst that I've heard so far, although not the first from Halliburton and the State Department along these lines. I want to turn to your attorney and get a summary of where things stand in terms of getting any accountability out of anyone for this, but I want to let people know that they can phone in, and we're going to have to take a short break for some messages and come back and continue. When we do, you can call in from anywhere in the world toll-free at 877-489-6350, or in the U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494. This is David Swanson at the People Speak Radio. We're speaking with Tracy Barker, and when we return, we will hear from her attorney, Stuart Hoffer. Back in a few.
Hello?
Tracy, you there?
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah, I know.
Did I do okay? I mean, I don't...
Yeah, I mean, I know it's hard for you to recount those details, and I thought you did a good job in getting that out there.
Tracy, I don't know how you survived it, much less talk about it, but I am certain that it's helpful that you're doing so. You know.
Are we talking about the State Department, how they try to pay me off, and are we going into that, or?
Do you want to?
You can if you want. I don't think I'm going to get into it all that much in terms of the present posture of the cases. But yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with you going into what attempts at remediation the State Department made. And if you want to talk about. And I don't know how you feel about the one investigator that you spoke with at the State Department, the female, who, if you want to say her name on the air, but what she told you about what was happening at the State Department with the case. Again,
yeah.
Sorry. I don't know if that's out there or not already, but, you know, perhaps that's somebody you want to save for later or somebody you don't want to discuss at this point.
No, I'd rather discuss it.
Okay.
It helps me with the way everything taken place.
Okay. I don't have a problem with that at all.
When we come back, Stuart, can we go to you first and get an overview of where things stand and then go back to Tracy?
Sure, absolutely.
And we may get some calls. I'm actually surprised we haven't gotten a single call yet, so we'll see. Maybe nobody's calling in.
Well, that's okay. I mean, we've got plenty to talk about if need be.
Oh, I think, yeah, I think so.
Join us on the People Speak Radio Show every Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of entertainment, education, activism, spirituality, politics, and literature. Get involved and make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak every Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio Network.
Maybe you're me.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. The economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
Like discussing politics or the hot topics of the moment? Got a favorite candidate or issue you'd like to share thoughts about? Then join us in a political cafe, a chat room on Paltalk. the world's largest online community with over 4 million users. Talk on a mic or type in text or just watch and listen. Open 24/7, a political cafe in the social issues politics category on HealthHawk.
Yeah, no, I'm on the air. Hi, how you doing? This is Wesley Snipes, and I'm sitting here with my Pleiadian and Andromedan friends. And, you know, we were just kicking it, talking about a little extraterrestrial kind of a thing. We're having a little party together. Everybody's coming through from the galaxy. But, of course, we got to get the right directions, so we got to have the right vibration. Right vibrations is listening to BBSRadio.com. Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready. Go. Where's my ticket for the ship, man?
And we are back at the PeopleSpeakRadio.net. This is your host, David Swanson. You can call in toll-free from anywhere in the world at 877-489-6350 or in the U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494. We have heard for the past half hour from an incredibly courageous woman recounting the endless harassment and assault she experienced from both Halliburton and the State Department, which often seemed to be one and the same while serving in Iraq. I'd like to turn now to Tracy Barker's attorney, Stuart Hoffer, and get an overview of where things stand in terms of both criminal and civil accountability, and maybe we can cover the criminal first. It may take no more than 10 seconds. My understanding is that U.S. contractors in Iraq are not held to account under Iraqi law and, in effect, are not being prosecuted, at least in this case, under U.S. law. Is that correct?
That is correct from our understanding as well, David.
But in terms of a civil angle, there are some other possibilities. Is that right?
Well, it depends on how you define the term possibilities. I can tell you the current status of Tracy's civil cases, although one of them is being handled by another attorney by the name of Gary Pitts, who does cases for contractors and contractors injured while serving on defense bases around the world. There's a statute called the Defense Base Act that provides certain benefits to workers who are injured while on defense bases, and he is handling that aspect of the case for Tracy. And he is somebody who, I'm told, is very experienced and knowledgeable in that area, so I certainly wouldn't want to step on his toes, nor do I profess being kind of an expert in that area. In terms of the matters that I'm handling for Tracy, we have two of those. One is a civil case against the assailant who is employed by the State Department, who, at least as of last year when the 2020 story ran, was still employed by the State Department and not disciplined.
And so people know this.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So that people understand, this is Ali Mokhtari, who was described in a ABC News 2020 report last December. Is that right?
That's correct. And despite some attempts by another attorney in North Carolina and some congressional help, Tracy was finally able to obtain some documents from the State Department under a Freedom of Information Act request that noted that there wouldn't be any discipline meted out to Mr. Mokhtari, but there was no reason given. And to my knowledge, no reason has yet been given by the State Department for why not only has Mr. Mokhtari been disciplined in any way, but he still continues to work in Iraq, is what we're told. In terms of civil actions, we have a civil lawsuit against him pending in the Eastern District of Virginia, Federal District Court in Alexandria, that is scheduled for a final pretrial conference sometime in April. And I anticipate that case going to trial probably sometime this summer. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And well, I was just, before going into that case, I was going to ask, are there any cases pending with regard to either the individual in the first incidents of harassment in Baghdad or the camp supervisor in the last incident we heard about in Basra?
Well, there are. Tracy, before I got involved in the case, had filed an EEOC charge of discrimination and retaliation with the Houston office of the EEOC, who, after an investigation conducted by an investigator by the name of Roy Wilkerson, who I've worked with before, is a very good investigator, the EEOC found reasonable cause to believe that Tracy had been retaliated against for engaging in what the law calls protected activity, and that is complaining about sexual harassment and retaliation.
So people are clear, the EEOC is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and you go
That's
to them
correct.
Because this is an on-the-job harassment?
That's correct. The
okay.
Title VII, which is the federal statute that prohibits sexual harassment and retaliation under these circumstances, is enforced on the administrative level by the EEOC, and then if they decide not to pursue the case on behalf of the United States, which they decided not to in this case, then it becomes a civil matter that the employee can take up at a federal district court, which was initially attempted by Ms. Barker's former counsel. That case is proceeding, although it is proceeding in an arbitration format. The federal district judge here in Houston, who had the case, ruled on January 30th that Tracy's case needed to remain pending in an arbitration format. And that is where it currently stands, although I am certainly researching additional avenues, if possible, to see about at least keeping part of that case in a court format as opposed to arbitration.
Okay. I've got a lot of questions, but we have people starting to call in, and I want to bring people in on this conversation as much as we can. And callers can address their questions to either Tracy Barker or Stuart Hoffer. We have Basima from Michigan on the line. Basima, thanks for calling the People Speak Radio.
Thank you, David. First of all, I would like to express my deepest sorrow at the events that have befallen Tracy. Tracy, you are an incredibly brave young woman. For you to speak out in light of all of that has happened to you is just an amazing attribute of yours, and I think you're just truly, truly a courageous person. What I would like to ask is Cynthia McKinney, during her first presidential debate, Stuart, had publicly announced that one of the dirtiest secrets that America had was that 1 in 5 military personnel was raped in the military or assaulted. Given the nature of the attacks, given the nature of a statement so prolific as that, and given the anonymous nature of the contractors that are being hired in Iraq, why is there not more publicity about these horrific events? Why does Tracy have to feel so isolated in this area?
I can maybe answer that.
Yeah, Tracy, I would like for you to certainly do that.
One of the biggest problems that contractors face is they are not counted. So there is no, when you're not counted, there's no statistics. We don't know how many people are assaulted or raped over in Iraq when it comes to contractors. Nobody keeps count of contractors, whether it's death or a rape or suicide or kidnapping. Right now, contractors are not being counted.
And what's your, anecdotally or otherwise, what is your impression, Tracy, in terms of the sort of statistic that Basima offered from the official military in terms of the contractor world? Is harassment anything like that prevalent or more so?
I don't know if it's more so since I was raped and assaulted in Iraq. I hear more not only on the contractor side, but also military side of rapes and sexual assaults. I don't know if it would be more so, but I know that contractors right now are not counted, so there's no way of telling how many people right now have been assaulted.
In fact, you're working on setting up a foundation to help others who are working in contract positions overseas, and you've already been hearing from quite a few other people with similar stories. Is that right? What can you tell us about that foundation?
It's called Warzone Workers Foundation. I am a founder of it, and so is my sister Denise. She's a big support of mine. We also got together with some other people that have been affected by the war. We have Marcy Clark. She's with the Iraq infections that the contractors have come back home with different diseases. We have Frank Nabolski from Old School America and Big Daddy Frank, who does the radio show. We have Janet Crowder with, like, American Contractors in Iraq. We have Cindy Morgan, who was the truck driver Cindy in Iraq. We have so many people that are founders of this foundation. And what we have done is we've been working for a little bit of time here, and we have located physicians, psychiatrists, and also attorneys that are willing to do pro bono for contractors who come back and who are injured, whether they need psychiatric care and they're dealing with PTSD or they've been injured, they don't know where to go. We've located physicians throughout the United States and also in Germany. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to connect the contractors with the physicians and the attorneys that can help them apply for their benefits, because right now, some of the contractors, when they come back, they have no medical care and they're being dumped. Some companies do have medical benefits that cover contractors when they come home, but not all companies that send contractors, to a war zone, they come home and they're left with PTSD or, you know, a bullet or, you know, a missing limb and everything, and they're stuck on their own. They don't know where to go. We have about 30 physicians right now and close to 40 attorneys, and we're, you know, and that's just working on it 1 week, and our plan is to go worldwide because contractors are coming from all over different parts of the world. So that is our plan, and our website is warzoneworkersfoundation.com.org, or you can put my name in, it'll direct you to it. It's a little bit under construction right now, but we have BBA attorneys, and we're also working with some of the universities with the medical students that are also willing to help in different areas of care for contractors, for free. And we are planning on doing conferences on PTSD and sexual assault coming, you know, soon. We're going to start doing those to inform people information and also to contact them with these individuals.
It sounds like a terrific project, Tracy, and one that, of course, shouldn't be needed. Our government should be doing it if the people of this country had any control over it. But people can go to warzoneworkersfoundation.org and find out how they can get involved and help out and volunteer and contribute. I want to bring another caller into this conversation and have a great deal of additional questions to try to fit in the next 15 minutes. This is the People Speak Radio. This is David Swanson with Tracy Barker and her attorney, Stuart Hoffer, and we have Edward Denny from Ogden, Utah, on the line. Edward, thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I know that Tracy grew up back here in the Ogden area, and we've watched this case from the minute it first went 2020, and just really proud of her. We love you back here in Utah. But I know that there was attempts made just through watching the media with a few congressmen, like Congressman Poe, I supposedly helped out quite a bit, and Senator Clinton was contacted. I'm curious why our elected representatives didn't apply a little more pressure onto the Justice Department to pursue a prosecution of Ali Muhtari, and you know, just quite curious why this was allowed. I don't understand decline to prosecute or decline to bring charges. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me when it's the evidence is there in the security. And to the attorney out of Houston, all I can say to you is Semper Fi. You're truly a good man, and Tracy's got a lot of guts.
Thanks for your call, Edward. Tracy, do you have a comment on that?
Well, even though Ollie McCurry had a sworn statement, the documents are actually located on HalliburtonWatch.org. There's a sworn statement by Ollie McCurry that he admitted to doing what he had done. But I actually have been going through Congressman Bob Etheridge for about 16 months now, who was the only person that was able to get me information on my case. I never have gone through Congressman Poe, but I did go through Congressman Bob Etheridge, who up to even in January, he had put a letter on the Attorney General's desk demanding answers in my case.
I would take the liberty, as the host of the program, Tracy, to throw in my two cents, which I do not intend to imply that you necessarily agree with, but this Congress has tried to get documents and witnesses out of this Justice Department and failed, and has tried to hold people in contempt of Congress, and the Justice Department has refused to enforce those things. So as long as this Congress is not going to impeach the people at the top, and we're going to have a Justice Department that doesn't uphold justice, it's not clear to me that there is much that can be done. Congress held hearings on this issue and has held hearings on many issues, but they simply amount to holding hearings. But I wanted to ask you, Tracy, about your contacts with the State Department since you've been back in the United States. Not the Justice Department, but the State Department, the employer of these contractors. Did they not offer you an
They did not keep me up with investigation, which is part of your rights as being a victim. I was not informed of anything at all that was going on with Ollie McCurry. I was not ever questioned to this day. I was given a statement that when I looked at it, I said, this is not my statement. My name is wrong. My husband's rank and the section of the military he belonged to was wrong and different events. And they said they had created a statement for me. And then the attorney advisor for the State Department offered me $3,500 to drop the charges against Ollie McCurry and to go away. I refused, and I got a call from the investigator that was assigned to my case, Lynn Flango, who told me that the case was being hidden, that she was yanked off the case because she was pushing for prosecution, and that her supervisor took the case away, and she had called me from her home on a Saturday and told me that you need to get an attorney because they're hiding the assault. I didn't hear from her for several months, and then I started getting phone calls from other sexual assault victims, gang rape victims. I had three calls, and they were handing out my phone number to other victims, and I had nowhere to go, and neither did these other victims. But I had been home for several months, and then I started getting called after I was home for several months.
And
so that's what they did, is they basically couldn't help me, and then they handed out my phone number to other victims, which I had nowhere to tell, you know, I had nowhere to direct them, as well as I wasn't getting justice myself.
And you were known to be seeking justice through other angles, and they offered you some money to drop it. Is that accurate?
Yes, $3,500.
The State Department.
And I told them it wasn't about the money. It was about justice and my rights as a human being and also as a victim to know what is going on with the case. And, you know, after that point, I never heard from the State Department again. And that's when I started writing Congressman Bob Etheridge asking for his help in my case. I tried to get answers in my case. I had been home since July of 2005. And I didn't know there was other cases of other victims that were not getting information or anything. And I didn't know of any other assault victims until 4 months after I was home. So, and now that people are talking about it in Congress are not getting answers, the more, you know, the more people that you hear, I mean, it's just a lot of people that can't get answers from the State Department.
Stuart, is that something that happens all the time, that the State Department or another branch of government offers our money, taxpayers' money, to the victim of a crime to hush them up?
Well, I can't speak for really any other situations, because this one is such a unique one. I've never heard of that being taken place. I mean, obviously, the federal government is sued from time to time under the Federal Tort Claims Act, and they settle those cases or they try them to a verdict. But that, I can't speak to it as a general proposition, but I would suspect that it happens. You know, the United States gets sued like any other party, and they have to settle those claims or try those claims like any other party, although they do have the benefit of a Justice Department and taxpayer-funded defenses and, you know, an endless supply of tax money to pay those judgments off if they need to.
Yeah, we know. It's our money. Tracy, I want to ask you about something that I heard, and this may be completely nuts, but is it true that your husband, who's served in the military for many years now, goes skydiving with President George W. Bush? Tracy, are you there?
The unit that he belongs to, that is part of their duties, and that's probably as far as I want to go on that. I don't think that's... My husband's really proud of his job, and I don't think that's really relevant
okay,
to what
okay.
we're talking about right now.
Well, let's leave your husband out of it. He wasn't involved. We only have a few minutes left in the program, which has gone by very, very fast. I wonder if each of you could offer briefly what listeners and people in the public can do in terms of lobbying Congress or in terms of assisting your foundation or otherwise spreading, educating, and motivating change around this issue, because it seems to be an extensive and ongoing program, and few and far between are those brave enough to speak out in this way about what happens to them. What can people who care about this do? Tracy, do you want to go first?
Sure. With the hearings that took place in December, I was invited to the congressional hearing to testify by Congressman Bob Etheridge, and unfortunately I wasn't able to testify, but I am looking forward to talking about what has happened to me in Iraq. So I was at that hearing that you were talking about. I was actually physically there. I had just given birth to twins and made the trip to Washington and was not able to testify, unfortunately. But so I was doing my part and trying to make change and was not able to take part in that event. But I have been working with my congressman and also with Congressman Bishop from Utah, and we are trying to do the Tracy K. Barker bill. And what we're trying to do is to pass a bill that will allow contractors to get medical care, whether it's psychological or health, when they come home, to make sure they're taken care of and not dumped once they come back from the war. So I'm hoping that this bill will pass so that the companies are somewhat responsible after these people come home, whether it's rape, lung injury, any kind of injury at all. Before they go about what they're going to do in the United States to make sure these people are okay.
Sounds like a great effort. And again, your foundation is at warzoneworkersfoundation.org. Stuart Hoffer, other than serving as an attorney on these cases, which most of us are unable to do, what can people do to get involved?
Well, one thing I would certainly recommend people do is take a look at House Bill 3010, which is the Arbitration Fairness Act of 2007. I mentioned that Tracy's case is currently in arbitration, and one thing that has been prevalent, and I speak from both sides of the employment bar because I also do a lot of employment defense, and that is it has been a very large movement by large employers to impose mandatory arbitration on the employees for any type of employment dispute. And arbitration has its benefits, certainly in a commercial context. In an employment context, I think it has a very different effect. And we would certainly encourage everyone to contact their congresspersons and support and certainly demand that the Congress person in their district review that bill, support that bill, and give it a fair hearing so that it makes it out of committee and at least we can get a full vote on the floor of the House and Senate.
Good advice. Tracy Barker, thank you for the courage in telling your story. And Stuart Hoffer, thank you. Thank you both for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
This is David Swanson at the People Speak Radio. We've been speaking with Tracy Barker, a former employee of the Halliburton Corporation, assaulted and harassed by Halliburton and the State Department in Iraq. There is a bill we heard in the works that would make it easier for employees to take their employers to court when these things happen rather than being forced into arbitration. Let's work to make it pass. Let's hope it passes. Let's hope against hope that it's not vetoed by the man who told us in early 2003 that we needed to take out Saddam Hussein because he tortured and raped people. This is David Swanson, your host at the People Speak Radio. .net. We will be back on Tuesday, same time, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, with former U.S. Senator James Oborevsky, the first Arab American to have served in the United States Senate. And a week from tonight, Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, we will be speaking with Kathy Wilkerson, a former member of the activist group and some would say terrorist group in the 60s. The Weathermen, and she is the author of an amazing book called Flying Close to the Sun. Back with you next week. Thanks for joining us.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea wall by the relief confessed I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you.